This is the Fucking Normal Podcast, the cheers, tears and Friday night beers of parenting disabled children.
I'm Rena.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're both mothers to daughters with special needs. Parenting a disabled child can often feel difficult to navigate. If this is you, you're not alone. We're here to share unique parenting stories and chat about the things that we've learnt and are still learning.
Prepare to sometimes laugh, sometimes cry, but hopefully leave with a shot of optimism in your arm. And don't forget, we are talking from a parent's perspective. We would never presume to talk on behalf of a disabled child or adult. So expect bad language and, quite frankly, some brutal honesty.
Because really, what the fuck is normal anyway?
Wake me up, loud as clouds, all my love for you.
In today's episode, we'll be talking about siblings and sibling relationships, parenting when disability's in the mix, and the decision to have more children. I'm the mother of one, the lovely Lua, and having more children is definitely on my mind at the moment. So I'm especially excited to listen to our lovely guests and Lauren's perspectives on having more than one child.
And for those who've not listened to The Fucking Normal before or have forgotten, I have two children, Bea, who is six with special needs, and Olivia, who is eight. And I am absolutely delighted to have not just one guest today, but two guests joining us to talk about this topic. We've got Gemma and Jess. Gemma Sherlock is an interior designer and mum to two boys, Jasper, who's six, and Spike, who's three. And she's a really good friend of mine. We actually met at a physio class that both Jasper and Bea went to. Jasper has cerebral palsy and drug-resistant epilepsy. He also has hydrocephalus. I think I said that right. And Gemma is a wonderful mum and a great drinking buddy to boot. I'm also really excited to have the lovely Jess joining us. Jess Honeyball, best surname ever, is a TV producer and director. She's done lots of fantastic TV. The one I want to talk to her about the most, though, is First Dates. She's also mum to three boys, including twins. Oh, my God. The twins, Dylan and Freddie, are four, nearly five, and her littlest, Leo, is two. Welcome, Gemma and Jess.
Hi.
Thank you.
How
so
is
much.
Everybody? When I came in, you were both saying that you were very tired today, so what's going on with that?
Oh, it's just having children, isn't it? It's just completely exhausting.
Yes.
But my night was broken. I know Jess's night was horrific because Leo was vomiting most of the night.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
The whole night, and then woke up at four wanting some milk, which I foolishly gave him because I was, you know,
because it was anything to plastic.
Four in the morning,
and then promptly turned around and just it all came out again.
Oh my gosh!
So, yeah.
Oh, thank
sort
you
of
so
two
much.
Two bits of sleep. Anyway,
yeah, we're really pleased to go into that. Yeah.
Thank you. Oh gosh, especially after that night. I mean, why don't you kick us off, Gemma, and tell us a bit about yours and Jasper's story?
As you said, Lauren, we've known each other for most of Bea and Jasper's lives now. And I think when we met, they were still quite little because they weren't walking yet. Well, they were just learning to walk. So
yeah.
I think you and I were still in the kind of aftermath of the hurricane of understanding, you know, that we had children that had complex needs and we didn't really know, were they going to walk and what life was going to be. So we've definitely been on this journey together. And the same is true with Jess and I, because we've known each other for years and years, and our decision to have children, obviously we didn't have our children together, but our decision, we talked about both.
Your decision was joined.
Mother and mother. But, you know, we were there in those times together. So, and for me personally, Jasper was born in 2015 and we'd spent a good few years trying to get pregnant with him. So he was a long-awaited, joyful, much-wanted little person. And we, we'd had lots of rounds of IVF and including miscarriage and... We couldn't wait for him to be born. And when he was born, it was a normal birth. it was a little bit delayed, but unfortunately, for reasons that we'll probably never know, he suffered a massive brain hemorrhage probably a few hours after he was born, and was rushed immediately to Great Ormond Street and had his first brain surgery there in the early hours. And we were there sort of on and off for, well, we were there for the first 3 months and then on and off for 6 months. And he underwent lots and lots of surgery in that time, you know, probably at least 10 surgeries, but most of them on his brain. And, but today he would walk in here now and you may not even notice that he had a disability. He's got mild cerebral palsy on one side, which is probably due to scarring on his brain from the initial bleed or possibly the surgery afterwards. And his biggest struggle in life is his epilepsy, which is a kind of drug-resistant epilepsy. So that is just something that we have to manage all the time. So lots of hospital visits and night seizures and not much sleep. And shortly after his birth, he was fitted with shunts that drain water from his brain because he has a condition called hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain, which happens when you, if you have something like a stroke or a bleed in the brain, you get blockages which stop the water flowing through your head into your spine. So he has shunts which allow that water to flow into his stomach. And yeah, so the decision to have him was very much like a positive decision. And the trauma of afterwards probably put us off having another one for some time. But that's, in a nutshell, how Jasper came to be. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. It's really emotional still hearing you talk about it. He was so little having all that surgery.
It was insane when you look back at the videos of him. I mean, and also it blows my mind that anyone is able to do brain surgery on a little baby over and over again.
And so, don't underestimate yourself as well. When you're going through that, you are just going through it. You're like, you're in it. But I always find when I think back to traumatic times in V's little life, visualizing myself in that situation is quite hard as well. Like, how did you get through it? How do you know? It's really,
I don't know, because I obviously, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, because second time around with Spike, I remember the midwife, not the midwife, the health visitor who comes to see you. Remember they do that surprise visit and they turn up. I think she thought I was some sort of deranged mother, possibly needing like to be shipped away, because I was just grinning and smiling and like, everything is just so amazing. She's like, is everything okay with you in the bed? I'm like, yeah, I'm in my own bed.
I'm breastfeeding him.
And I don't have to like weigh a nappy. My own loo is there. Like, when you're, I went from like giving birth to in, you know, parent accommodation, running across the road, like wondering, is he going to make it for the next 5 minutes? Please let him make it for 10 more minutes. Please make him make it tomorrow. And then into surgery, out of surgery, into surgery, out of surgery. And the trauma of after the surgery, never mind like what's going on after you give birth, your body and all of that stuff. Oh, anyone that's had a baby, it's, and then all the stuff that's on top of that. And you're also expected in hospital to just, most of the nurses working there when I was there were quite young. I mean, they were absolutely proficient, but a lot of them hadn't had children. So there's an assumption that you're the mother, you must know what you're doing. This was my first child. Like, I didn't know how to change nappies or
hold them properly.
Or, you know, any
let alone
of that
with
stuff.
The bits, like, you know, all when they're connected to the bits.
Connected to all the tubes and the beeps, and it's all going off all night, people coming in. So it was 6 months of insane, insane trauma when you look back on it. But hopefully that's my trauma, not so much his. I mean, obviously it is, but he doesn't know any difference. So we definitely made a decision. I would think about a year after he was born, Rowan's his dad, my husband, and we just said, we are not having any more children. Like, we couldn't do it to Jasper. Can you imagine if it happened again? There's no way we can do that.
Right.
Sure enough.
Time moves on.
Can you just tell us about
So we also had an IVF journey to fall pregnant, and I had recently been diagnosed as celiac. So anyway, that's just not worth getting into. But my body hadn't quite healed, so I just wasn't able to get pregnant. They couldn't find out a reason why, but I think that's probably why. And the first round was, they didn't even get to putting any eggs back because all the eggs sort of stopped developing when they fertilized, and they didn't know whether that was a lab error or an egg issue or a sperm issue or what. So when it came to the second time round, they were like, oh, I've got good egg haul again, you know, but we don't know if the same thing's going to happen. So even though, how old would I have been, 35, they were like, wouldn't normally recommend to put two back in, but why not? This might be the only chance you get, because there was sort of no explanation for what had happened before. Mm-hmm. So we did put two back in, and then they both were viable, you know, they were growing. So I got really massive. Two babies, two placentas. And then
had still looked amazing, I just asked.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure my tummy now would agree with you. But had a on the face of it, a very normal pregnancy,
right,
and had scans every 2 weeks after a certain amount of time. But it was a shock, so that when the twins were born, Freddie was the first out, and I was, you know, in a kind of very different place, having pushed for, I think, an hour or something, and then had an appeal. I mean, this isn't about the birth, but it was pretty horrific. and had episiotomy, and then, hearing Dan describe what actually happened when they used the forceps to get the babies out, he sort of imagined this sort of delicate, like, and it was, you know, he said it was like medieval,
yeah,
like feet is, up, it? Like three or four doctors hanging on the back of this obstetrician.
Oh my god.
Both times. So she
twice.
Yeah. So when Freddie came out, I was like, one's out, right, I'll just kind of regroup. And Dan was like
green on the floor.
Yes, that too. Was like, hang on, I think there's something wrong with Freddie's arm. And sort of went over to where Freddie had, well, you know, he'd sort of come on my chest for a bit, but you know, I was just like so wobbly from all the drugs.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't feel like I can hold him. Like, I think you should just take him away for a minute and I'll just get pushing again. And they noticed that his arms have stopped below the elbow. He didn't have a forearm or a right hand. And I don't know whether they noticed it at the time, but he had a fixed elbow. So he sort of can't, it's a real shame in terms of any prosthetics for now, because it's quite limited, mm-hmm, the use of prosthetics for him, or, you know, at the moment anyway. And then I pushed out Dylan, still like 45 minutes later, which is a really long time. Wow. For twins. So that was all pretty difficult. And then I remember so vividly, even though I was in a kind of, you know, on a different planet, Dan saying to me in recovery, you know, listen, we need to tell you something about Freddie. He was without a hand. So that was a big shock. But, you know, he's really healthy otherwise. And
can I just say also, as his godmother, he is just the most charming, handsome little boy. I mean, they both are, all three of your kids are, but Freddie has got just a, he's just got a je ne sais quoi. He's just dreamy little boy. And he's just, he isn't held back by his arm. Of course he is, but not in a way that he would know or that it would.
Yeah.
That he's just fabulous. He really is.
He's a
dream bub.
He is. He's an arsehole to his brother.
Particularly
the younger one. But very competitive, which is probably why,
yeah,
as a twin or whatever, he's certainly the most competitive of all the boys.
But can I ask you, is that,
yeah,
is missing something like that on prenatal scans, is that quite common with twins, or
did they pick it up even in the scans? Or
no, it was never picked up, so it was a total surprise.
Wow.
Total shock, which is kind of odd when you have a,
right,
two weekly scans.
Yeah.
So, and then there was a kind of investigation. Well, the lady who's sort of the head of, who does, I can't think of what her title is, but she came in and was like, obviously slightly kind of trying to manage,
and
we wouldn't have done, you, a friend, good friend of mine's a consultant, and she said, you know, you could sue, and that wasn't in our interests, but it would have helped to have known, mm-hmm, perhaps,
of course,
to prepare,
mm-hmm,
a bit. But it wouldn't have changed our decision go ahead, you know.
Yeah,
of course not, but it would have helped those early weeks, which are so hard anyway. And you know, I just had lost all control of my bladder for about the first month.
God.
And so just dealing with twins and your own body, as you say, and then sort of almost like as the secondary thing, oh, and actually I have a baby who's got a disability, and kind of realising that his life will be full of challenges that yours didn't have, or childhood anyway will be full of challenges that you didn't have.
Or that you even understand, because...
Exactly.
I think, yeah, our experience of disability, certainly my experience of disability up until my B was born, was very, very little. So you have, and you've been kind of, unfortunately, socialised in such a way and brought up in such a way that you probably do have these awful preconceptions and, and fears.
And just not much exposure.
No.
To anybody with disability. And a few of my friends, like one of my friends, Will, said, oh, yeah, I went to school with somebody with one hand who was the best football player on the team. And, you know, some people have, you know, one person perhaps, or certainly with this kind of physical disability. And I just hadn't met anybody. I was like, what? This is, anyway. So
I think, along that line, I mean, at primary schools, I just went to my local primary school. We had kids with all sorts of disabilities and challenges, and that was totally normal. And then I went off to like to private school where you're selected based on your academic credentials, and nobody who's like got the money and like selection process to get to that point, then they're not ever looking for anybody that's got difference or challenges in that way. So the segregation happened for me quite early on, and that's just so terribly sad. And I don't know how to change that for our children, you know, and even now in the state system, there's still a massive segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone with any complex needs probably at some point will end up going to a really specialised school, because there just isn't the care and money to keep them in the mainstream system.
True.
So,
but then your children will have that sort of extra little thing because they're used to a sibling that's got a disability, so that's gonna just change the way that they perceive the world
totally
from other children, you know. So I mean, I've asked you about Livia and how she talks about B with her school friends and how she introduces B, and it's, you know, so much more worldly than her peers.
Yeah, I think that is a real benefit to the siblings of a child with a disability, that they have had a very early exposure to differences within their family. I mean, it could be true of other things as well. If you've got a parent with a disability, there are definitely advantages in terms of how her, for Olivia anyway, in terms of how her worldview's been shaped and how kind of matter of fact she is about everything. Mm-hmm. So because Olivia was there before B, she was nearly two when B was born. And you talked, Gemma, about wanting to put off having another child for a long time. I'm not going to say Olivia was like a super easy baby, but she was pretty straightforward. So we kind of wanted to get on it again. We weren't getting any younger. So we tried to get pregnant again quite soon after Olivia. So Olivia was 21 months when B was born. So it's quite a small age gap. And I think the trauma that you kind of they've described in those early months, we definitely went through that with B in terms of, you know, she was in hospital for a long time. We just kept getting more information and more diagnosis and lots of uncertainty about what 18q deletion syndrome was. What does that mean? What's her future look like? But we had this additional factor in that we had already had a child who was one, and had, like, she was staying with my mum when I was in the hospital with B, and then I just didn't come home, and B didn't come home for quite a while. And kind of managing that at the time was obviously an additional kind of worry and concern. Yeah, I don't know what, I mean, she's so little now. Oh, she's so little then that now she doesn't remember a time pre-B, and, you know, she's always been in her life, and they're just wonderful together. But I think all those early days of hospital appointments, and B didn't look the same as other babies. She had this huge kind of black hearing aid with wires. She had her feet in either plaster cast or like orthopedic shoes, and she was fed from like special bottles, and you know, there was lots of different kind of things, different accessories, if you like, that she had. And Olivia just really took it as, well, you know, that's my baby sister. You know, she didn't know any different. No. And she became very matter of fact. And
just normal
for her. Yeah, really normal, like normalised it, and was great at telling other kids. I remember once going into a friend's house, and it was just after B had got her boots. So she had like little boots and bar that kept her feet in a certain position. And they were like this big metal bar in between them, and then like strapped on boots, which was a total pain to...
joining the shoes.
Yeah, to keep her feet in
a turnout.
Yeah, like ballet turnout. Yeah. And the little girl who, my daughter's friend, was... that is so cool. And because she sort of saw it as like some sort of, I don't know, like a skateboarder or like a snowboarder. They looked a bit like that. She was just so mesmerized by her boots, and it was the nicest thing she could have said.
Oh, Olivia was chuffed.
Yeah, like, yeah, and then exactly. Cool. Olivia, big sister, even though she was like two at the time, was like super
proud.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, those are her boots, you know. I just love that. I love that kids can be so, unfazed by these things, because they don't come with this baggage and preconceptions, and they just take the world as it is around them. They take it on face value.
What, because Jasper's got a half brother and sister who are quite a lot older, and Jim is his older brother, and Georgia, his big sister. And we had a quick conversation about how Jasper's disability had sort of had an impact on their life, or how they felt about things. And Jim was quite heartfelt about it. He obviously grew up in a similar background to me, like quite privileged, middle class, everyone's the same, everyone looks the same. And then along came Jasper, and he just said it opened his eyes to the fact that disability is normal, you know, and that he was quite shocked by the reaction of some of the people around him who had no concept what it is to have a family member or a friend with a disability. And they both adore Jasper, but it had retrospectively a big impact on them as young people in their late teens, early 20s, for the better. You know, what an incredible thing to have come into your life when you haven't really been exposed to difference.
Really,
it's really moving. He won't mind me saying, because he was like, I know it's a bit mushy, but I just such a sweetheart. And he just said, I just adore him. I think he's incredible. And they don't act strangely around him. They don't see it as different, in the same way that Olivia feels about B, but it is different to them because they don't have any experience of it. But yeah, it's opened their mind and their eyes.
That's so lovely to hear. Oh gosh.
Well, he sent me a message last night because I'd asked him this very question. And he says, the main way in which it has impacted my life is that these things can happen to anyone. Oh, Jim, I'm going to cry. He's probably crying, isn't he? These things can happen to anyone, and that it's so important to have the support and care from a strong family. I've also noticed the ignorance of many people who have never had a disabled person or family member close to them, which is totally infuriating. But you can't blame them, as you just don't get it until you're faced with it. I understand so much more about his disability, and I don't even see it as a disability, more as a superpower. He might experience life in a slightly different way to us, but it will develop him in a way that we won't understand. It's made me research and understand a lot more about the challenges faced by others. Sorry if that's a bit mush. But he's just opened my heart so much, and I love him to absolute bits.
I know Georgia
would feel exactly the same.
That's so lovely.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a genuine point. Maybe, you know, for a future episode, it would be great to have somebody on who is an actual sibling, because we're just talking
what it means to have another child.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the reason that we wanted to discuss this is because I'm at that stage. So, like, it's been 6 years nearly since Lua was born. She was my first. She had massive trauma with her. We spent 7 months in hospital, kind of touch and go for ages. She has a lot of accessories with the tracheostomy and the ventilation and all of the...
And amazing clothes.
And amazing clothes. I mean, we try.
Accessories.
We try.
She's the best person I've ever met.
Oh, thank you, thank you. And my partner and I are kind of at that stage, like, we're not getting any younger. We do want more children. I've always been brought up, when we've discussed it with family members, it's always been there, you either have two or you have none. Sort of thing, because it's, you always think, oh, they're going to be so lonely being alone, why not give them a sibling? But then obviously when you've had such trauma with a child, it's like, will I put myself through this again? What if having another child impacts the way that I am with my previous child? You know, they require so much attention and all of the hospital admissions and all of the sicknesses. Can I, as a parent, give as much to another one? So I'm very interested to kind of hear your decisions to have more children and what were the pros and cons, essentially. Yes, go Jess, what about you?
I think you, I mean, you were already having to deal with many of those things without a choice because you had twins, so you already had two, and you already had somebody fighting against it and trying to give to both. I don't know if that's relevant also.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily the decision to have another child, but
it's weird because in our minds, think in my head, I'd always wanted three kids, and then when it was just taking a while and then we needed IVF, oh, God, this is never going to happen, it's too late. And then having had twins, I mean, it wasn't that the first time around was so great and we were like, yeah, let's have another one. So it was, I think in many ways, and this sounds so selfish, that it was like I was robbed of that, like, wonder, you know, that kind of baby bubble, the magic, the one, like you had with Olivia.
Yeah.
That felt like you had that proper bonding experience. Of course I've bonded with both the twins, but it was like firefighting for so long and getting routines and blah, blah, blah. And also, Dan and I were like, well, you know, we do have other eggs in the freezer, IVF-wise. but, you know, let's not go there. Why don't we just see if this happens naturally? And I really didn't believe it would happen naturally. And then I guess just I had not eaten gluten, you know, since my diagnosis. And I think my body was just
ready,
was healthier again. For whatever reason. So then 38, so the boys were nearly three when Leo was born and conceived naturally. And but there, so I remember I was really I was denied of lots of things when I was pregnant with twins. Like when I went to a hypnobirthing class, they just laughed. They were like, you can't have twins and do hypnobirthing. When I was at the hospital, the consultant was like, ha ha, when I said I would like to go to the birthing suite. So okay. So with Leo, I was like, I really want to do those things.
Right.
And they said, oh, hang on a minute. When you had your last pregnancy, Freddie was born with, so the diagnosis he's been given is Poland syndrome, which is that wasn't just his right hand that was missing. He also has some muscular differences. So he was born without his right pec, without his bicep, and only one of the tricep heads. So, and lots of Poland syndrome doesn't affect the rest of your body, but you do have this absence of the right pec muscle. So anyway, he's had a muscle transfer surgery 3 months ago, which has all gone really well to move the lap to here. But because of this diagnosis that took ages to get, and nobody at the hospital knew anything about this, and it was very unusual, I gather. So they said, oh, well, you know, it's likely you might have this again. I don't think you can go into the birthing centre. I was like, this is rubbish. It makes no impact on the birth. It's just a purely physical thing. There's, if even this were to happen, there's no sort of other condition that would impact the aftercare, being in the birthing suite rather than the ward. So I had to get letters from Great Ormond Street. And so that was all sort of
a fight.
That
had
a fight.
Fear of the birth.
Well, and also it's, we had lots of tests, and there's nothing genetic in Dan or I. It's just a developmental thing. At like 7 or 8 weeks, the arm didn't develop, and you know, there were these differences on his right side. But it's so random, it's sort of one in 20,000 live births, I think, have a similar sort of developmental difference, limb difference. So, yeah, lots of letters saying there's I'm as likely to have this again as that person over there. You know, it's not sort of me related. But anyway, the decision to have another child, other than wanting to go to baby cinema again, because frankly, that's enough reason to have another child.
Oh, that's why you should have another child.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Coffee. Okay, that's it. Okay, right. Okay. I'm leaving and I'm going to go and do the deed.
Anyone who doesn't
so
know, baby cinema is basically like they show films in the day that you can take your baby to and just boobs out if you're breastfeeding.
Also, you get a slice of cake with your ticket.
And it's a cup of tea. And a cup of tea. And coffee.
And coffee.
I mean, these things are big, big things that I just never experienced. And you know, why not have another child just to go to baby cinema?
Exactly. I could only go with another person because I had two fucking babies. So I was like, well, other than the fact I want to go to baby cinema, I mean, genuinely, that was probably 50% of the reason we had another child.
I might have another one, actually.
Yes, let's do it together. Be pregnant at the same time so that we can go to the cinema together.
Yeah. That's key. It was about having that experience. And I really, I don't know if I even want to say this. I think somewhere buried in me was that I think I sort of wanted to know I could have a typical...
Oh,
baby?
Amen. That's the big, big, big thing for me. 100%. Yeah. Because when you have a child with a disability, when she was born, my initial immediate reaction was, what is wrong with me? Mm. Why did I, why did my body, create this being that has all these issues? Mm. And then it's always been in the back of my mind, can I do it again? I've had a miscarriage. So then it's again, another thing of like, oh crap, it's me.
It's me.
So
what do I do?
Yeah. I need to prove to myself that I can have a healthy typical child. And I feel like it would be kind of really relaxing to my mental health to just like calm me down and think, actually no, you are fine, it's fine. It was just a thing that happened. So I totally understand what that what you were saying with that.
It's a sort of,
it's crazy,
doesn't
but...
and it doesn't feel good to say, but yeah, to sort of think, oh, I can have a non-disabled child and have that experience. And
I think everybody feels that way who has gone through something similar. So you're not speaking and like it's not new to our ears. I think we all feel that way.
Mm. I don't know that it's been amazing for Freddie, I have to say, having another child. I mean, hopefully it will do in later life.
Right.
But he, I do feel quite bad because it all happened in such a short space of time.
Just to clarify on that, so you had three boys under three.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Can we give you a medal or something?
Two of whom are twins.
Oh my god.
So I do feel like, and because we were trying for Leo, but I genuinely don't think we'd do it naturally. And I do feel a bit guilty about the fact there's only two of us and there's three of them, and not really being able to give them as much as I'd like in terms of one-on-one time, and that Freddie's disabled and we had this operation in Leeds for this muscle transfer, and I was up there for a few days with him, and not with, you know, Leo was only just one at that point, no, one, 18 months. So there is a bit of me that in an ideal world, I wouldn't have planned it this way.
Right.
That mum guilt there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
We all carry that mum guilt. Please don't like find other ways of piling guilt onto yourself. It just, my mother-in-law has a saying, which I'm sure she wouldn't mind me sharing, that don't feel guilt. It's just a waste of energy. Just don't feel it. Try and just abandon it. And we all feel it. And there's three of them and two of us. But then think about how many relationships you've created. Like, if you have one child, that's a relationship. Just, here goes my maths bit. There's just a relationship between you and that child and your partner and that child. If you have two children, there's an extra relationship. There's only one extra relationship. But you have three children and you've created more than one extra relationship there. That's amazing.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, Freddie hates Leo.
At the moment.
He wouldn't mind you saying this.
Relationship. Not sure that exists.
Sometimes
currently,
that is a type of relationship. Who knows? I mean, what about you, Gemma? That decision to have a child.
I definitely don't think there was any part of me that wanted to do like having the baby bit again, or like having a normal baby bit, because I was just absolutely terrified the pregnancy with Jasper was really great. Like, it was, I loved being pregnant. Mm. I loved just mooching around and being pregnant. And
me too.
But the birth was really traumatic. And then obviously afterwards was just, you know, brutal. And so I think I was just terrified of anything like that happening again, or even just going near a hospital again, because we're just in and out of hospital. Mm. So I think the decision was really more about Jasper having a sibling, because I have a sister. Our mum has passed away, so our relationship is, you know, it's crucial. I think I wouldn't feel anchored unless I had her in my life. Obviously, I've got amazing friends, but and our relationship hasn't always been straightforward. Like, we used to argue, we're very different in many ways, but that fact that she is my sister will never go away, will never change. And I think I really wanted that for Jasper, but also was terrified that how was I going to manage it? Because his seizures at the moment are quite good, touch wood, but, you know, he, at that point in time... I definitely shouldn't have said that. At that point in time, it was awful. Like, we were in and out of hospital. You know, we have two monitors all through the night. And he's having seizures in the night that you can't really see. So sleep is fraught, because if you drop to sleep, then he may have a seizure you haven't noticed. And he needs to get his medication quite quickly. Otherwise, they don't stop. So I wasn't sure how we were going to manage it. But I just felt like it was something we had to do, and I think Ro felt the same way at the same time. And it was also a financial decision. We did have lots of frozen embryos, so that also is like blows my mind that Spike, my youngest, and Jasper are the same age essentially, because they were harvested and fertilized at the same time, and then they were in the freezer. So Spike was just sitting in the freezer waiting,
ready.
I don't know if you ever hear this.
Blows your mind. Waiting.
Yeah, so they're actually in a cellular level the same age.
Twins.
Yeah. Yeah, but we decided to go for it. And I think we said, let's just try a couple of rounds. And I think we were both really of the mind that, because it is brutal going through IVF. Like, it's hardcore. It's, you know, they make you go through essentially the menopause, and then you're like pumped with drugs and you're injecting every day. Mm-hmm. And it takes a long time, and you're spending money all the time. They're trying to admit you had drugs. So we said, look, let's just see if it happens in one or two rounds. And if it doesn't, then c'est la vie. We've got this amazing child. And it didn't happen the first time. And then we were on it. So like, well, we've got to try again. And we tried again. And we got pregnant with Spike. And I can't tell you, like, he's just a wonderful addition to our family. Like, he's absolutely, he's just a bundle of frenetic, physical energy, totally different from Jasper, who's gentle and sweet and kind and mild. And Spike is, he just came out like roaring his like his name.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's alpha Spike to the core. And coping with him was difficult when Jasper was little, because obviously I wanted to be there for Jasper. Jasper had all these, you know, he was walking, but he was still very wobbly, couldn't do stairs. He still needs help with all his clothes. Still to this day, needs a lot of extra help. And then we were in and out of hospital. So I think I probably didn't give Spike enough full-on, you know, I didn't really have that time of like glorious motherhood that you think you're going to have, because actually it was like, Jasper, Spike. And then I was like, am I giving enough to Spike? Oh my God, he knows that I'm not. I'm focusing on Jasper. And Jasper was really needy. And that was all rocky. It was rocky. Gosh. It was difficult. I'm not going to say it's easy.
Easy, yeah.
But that's like, that is families anyway. And Spike was so full on. Like, he was walking at 9 months and he was climbing and just like,
oh my God,
beating and pushing and beating so loud.
Jasper, so he's like the typical second child,
oh,
basically.
God, on steroids. And Jasper would cover his ears and say, "Mommy, he's so loud." And I'm like, "Oh no, I don't know what to do with this child." But as time has gone on, what a therapy for Jasper, because Jasper never really crawled. He wasn't strong enough, and eventually learned to walk. So he missed developmental parts, yeah. Which, you know, the neurologically, those pathways just didn't form. But right. Spike did all that really quickly, and Jasper would copy him. To this day, he copies him. Right. So he's gone back and done those things over again. And Spike will climb a tree. Jasper's like, oh, my God, no, I couldn't climb a tree. And then he's doing it. Mm-hmm. So Spike leads the way. Jasper follows. Jasper can't really initiate his own imaginative play. Spike does that naturally, because that's what apparently. That's what kids do. They're normal. Who knew? And so Jasper can will join in. And so now as they get, we're just moving into a phase where it's like, I can actually leave them for 5 minutes without it, you know, somebody being thrown down the stairs, Jasper being thrown down the stairs. It's definitely like Jasper. Yep. And they're playing together and they have their own dynamic, which is sometimes feisty and sometimes upsetting, but mostly love. And oh god, I'm so glad we did it. It's made our family, it's been really hard, it's been really exhausting, but we feel like it's made our family stronger and richer. I would say do it. And about the fear of that first bit, like that's real, that's not gonna go, like I just had to take ownership of it and I said I am having a cesarean, nobody is gonna fucking stop me, I'm going on the NHS, I'm gonna have a cesarean, I need to take control of this. And they were like, oh, I said no, you're going to give me a cesarean. Yeah. And I want it. I don't want to go at the same hospital. So I went down to like, what's it called? Chelsea and Westminster, which is very, very nice.
Ah.
I recommend it. So I didn't want to be in the hospital that he was born in, or all the hospitals that we're in and out of all the time. So that was a new fresh experience.
You were very strong about that. I was
determined
really,
to do it differently.
Really. Very impressive.
And it's, on the day he so was strange. Born, I was like just a wreck, like shaking, physically couldn't stop shaking. And I was like, just get him out. You could have just put me to sleep for 3 days. I didn't want to know any of it. I didn't want any of the birthing or hypnobirthing or anything. I was like, get this baby out of me safely.
Yeah.
And then I want to wake up in my own bed with a child that is healthy. And
yeah.
So I couldn't get out of there fast enough. And then I found myself in bed with the health visitor being like, you're all right, girl.
God, it's just so dreamy. Are you smoking something?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so crazy because I have the thing in my head. So Lua was born at St. Thomas's. And it's a lovely hospital, and like the birthing suites, the way you give birth, the windows are massive. I'll never forget. And like you see Parliament and Big Ben, and it's beautiful, and like Lambeth Bridge, love, love, love. But like having given birth, and then like my dad and my mum came and looked like flowers because you know you're just giving birth, even though the baby's fucking in ICU, but fuck it. So I have this picture of like red roses and the view of just like London, and it's beautiful. And I have a thing in my mind where I'm like, I want to go back there and redo it.
Yes.
Because it was wonderful otherwise. I want to do it the same way, but just have a different outcome.
Yeah.
That's like kind of thing in my head. And we spoke about it this morning because I had a dream last night about hospitals. And I was like, you know, Arb's like, I think I want to, when we do have another baby eventually, I think I want to go back to St. Thomas's. And he's like, fuck. No, fuck no. No way am
his
I walking back.
Yeah, different to yours. Yeah.
Like even because we spent like 7 months there and there was an AMT coffee shop that we had lunch all the time.
Smell it.
Every time I see an AMT, like randomly, like there's one in Richmond underground station, I will take a picture. And I'm like, look, AMT, he's like, fuck off. Don't show me it. I don't want to know. I don't want to see it. I don't want to like just anything to do with that fucking place. Massive trauma. So we're in like that mind, and I was like, where would you give birth? He's like, I don't know, UCL or any other hospital, just not that one. So we're in two minds.
Well, if
where...
it happens when it happens, you're the one giving birth, so
yeah,
you get to veto that decision.
I will decide.
Exactly.
But another thing I wanted to get into is, for example, like Lua will always need help and she's never going to leave my side. And selfishly, I want to give her a sibling that will be there when I'm not. Have you guys thought about this?
100%. Yeah. That's, I think that was like the biggest shock for us when Jasper was doing so well when he was little. We couldn't believe like where he'd come from. Like the moment he was born, they said his head is just black. We scanned him, it's just black. Mm. I was like, what does that mean? Like, is he going to survive? And they're like, I'm sorry, I don't know. Like he'll either make it the next 5 minutes or he'll walk out of here in a year's time. And we were like, what? And he was doing so well. And then we went to see his neurosurgeon his neurosurgeon is incredible. Kudos to him, but they're not known for their sort of bedside.
Right.
And he was pushing for him to have epilepsy surgery where they disconnect half the brain. And it would mean he would definitely be wheelchair bound and various other, you know, there could be
massive
many
complications.
Massive risks, but they said potentially he would have like 50% chance of less seizures, which to me just sounded bonkers. But that's by the by. At that point, he was like, you do realise that this kind of epilepsy, he's not going to be able to live an independent life, and we're potentially giving him the opportunity to do so. It just hit me like a ton of bricks because he was doing so well, because he looked so great. I started to think, yeah, how do you live independently if you can't be alone because you're having seizures? Equally, that might change. I don't know. But that got me thinking about all those things, and it gives me the fear in the shower, gives me the fear in the nighttime. Like, what happens if something happens to me? What happens? Can my sister look after them? And I think I put a little bit of pressure on Jim and Georgia when they were little because they have such a great bond as siblings. And equally, he's not their responsibility at all. And it's complex having a newborn baby from your dad with his new wife, and that's complex for them. I know that, but I put a little bit of pressure on them, like, you love him like a brother. And they were like, shit, man, you're just gonna calm down a bit. But because I was like, who's here for him? Who's here for him? And still now, to Spike, I'm like, he's your brother. He's gonna be your brother forever. I read them books about it, but I do feel that, like, not, Spike may not be able to look after him, it's such a pressure, but at least it's another bond, it's another tie, it's another connection. So yeah, totally feel that.
Good, I'm not alone in that. It's a crazy, crazy way to think about it. And sometimes it feels so selfish, like, I want another baby to be around when I'm dead. Like, it's so fucked, but I feel like she's also at that stage where, like, children are so amazing to her. Like, she'll stop in the middle of the street and, like, chase after kids. And they're a bit like, what the hell is this, what? And she's just obsessed. And I can sense now, which is why we're doing this podcast, that she's lonely and she needs to have that
benefit.
Yeah, massively.
She's
massively.
Very sociable. Like, very. She's so engaging.
And, like, adores children. So it's like, I now need to, like, suck it up, basically, and make that decision and give her something that will be so beneficial for her. So you guys have all prompted me.
The fear is that it doesn't go to plan. Anything can happen. Like, it may not be anything like this happened to Lou, but we just don't know. So it's going to be a leap of faith, isn't it? And you go into it with an open heart and hope that the outcome is what you want it to be.
And possibly the pregnancy won't be the worry-free time you had first time. Like you both said, you had that walking around, loving being pregnant, because you might have all those anxieties. I certainly did.
Yeah.
In terms of the digit scan and blah, blah, blah. But there's every chance that then that newborn baby bit is just very different. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, attracting it.
And also, Lou is now a little bit older, so you really are, like, on top of managing. Well, she can manage her own track. Now she just pulls that out.
Yes.
Give you a heart attack.
Gives me heart attacks.
So she can take care of herself. But she's at a point where you're a little bit more, like, in control of what you know about her and her needs. When they're really little, it's still like, what is this?
How do I do it? I mean, like, for the first 3 years, you're like, what is this person? Like, how am I going to deal with you for the rest of your life?
And I think that's the same with a normal one.
Non-disabled.
As a mother, you get sent home with a living being and you have no idea what you're doing. So for us, it's just like triple fold of you, like, even more so, because there's so many things coming in.
And it's nuts because she was in hospital for 7 months, so really, like, I had the help, like, the nurses were doing everything. I could just sit back and, like, let them wash her, let them change her nappy, feed her,
they maybe doing most of that once he was out of ICU.
Oh no, I was quite like, mm-hmm. And because the trachy, so I was very frightened and a bit like, oh my god. And then when we did get home, when she was like 7-8 months, I was just in total, like, shock, because partner's gone away, you're left at home alone with this child who is, like, attached to bits and whatever, and it is now fully your responsibility. I was like, oh my god. I had carers in the night as well, which I still do, but, like, so I didn't have, like, the newborn baby staying up all night doing the 3-hourly feed, nothing. So I'm also petrified of how that's gonna be once I
Brutal.
Do have and it's like, am I ready?
You'll love it.
You think?
Like, look at when I said I was, like, delirious with happiness, because I was like, at the point when most people are, like, really stressed, my baby's not latching, I was like, It's fine. I'll sort it out.
They'll find a way.
This is nothing.
I think I want to have a third little.
Yes, do it.
I mean, that whole thing you were talking about, you know, Spike being there for Jasper, we've talked about having a third. And one of the things that comes into our decision, rightly or wrongly, and somewhat unfairly, I think, is a lot on Olivia. You know, she's already, even though she's eight and be six, feels like a lot larger age difference. And she really does look after it. Help her amazing. And she knows more about physio, OT, speech therapy than most adults.
Yeah, sure. Also, she always knows what B's saying. Even when B was really little, she would know what she was saying.
They can communicate, and even though B can't really communicate, Olivia understands and interprets for her, which has sometimes been not so good because it's not encouraged B to try and find the articulation. But it is amazing, but you sort of think that is a lot on Olivia for the rest of her life. Absolutely, like you in the shower, I'm absolutely terrified I won't be there. It's like, maybe we should make another human to help.
I have that though with Spike, because Spike and Jasper share a room. So since he was little, he's, you know, been woken up in the night to find I'm calling an ambulance and I'm like all on Jasper. Jasper's having a seizure and we're like all Jasper. And he's in the middle of this like trauma and the ambulance people will come into the room and the lights are on and then they take us away. And he's had that over and over again since he's baby. He doesn't know any different. Yeah. So for him, that's normal.
On that, how do you talk to Spike about Jasper? And similarly, Jess, do you talk to Freddie's siblings about having a sibling with a disability?
Well, Jasper seizures are so subtle that I'm constantly asking him, are you okay? Are you having a seizure? And so that is just a language that is around Spike from day dot. So he will ask Jasper, are you okay? Are you having a seizure? And now they're getting a little bit older and Jasper's seizures, have been quite good for a few weeks. His independence is growing a little bit. So, for example, they'll play upstairs on their own. I might go downstairs, which I would never have done before. And I know that Spike is with him. And I've said
so he already has the responsibility.
He already has it, which maybe isn't fair, but c'est la vie. So Spike says to him, are you okay, Jasper? And Jasper is meant to say to him, I'm having a seizure. And Spike's meant to come and run and tell me, which I think he would. And he has been in a scenario where we're driving to Cornwall and then the back of the car and Jasper's had a long seizure. We've had to pull over on the motorway and the police have come, the ambulance have come, and we're trying to deal with that seizure. And Spike has just sat in his seat like an absolute sweetheart. And this is a child who cannot sit still. Mm. He understands the gravity and the seriousness of it. And that's, you know, that's okay. That's all right. And so we talk about it all the time. Jasper doesn't really have a scoopy do what epilepsy is or what it means, but occasionally he'll ask me a question like he asked me the other day like, what is cerebral palsy? And then we had a really nice conversation about it, and then at the end he was like, so does that mean I can go in a minibus?
Sorry, the kid's always looking at the positive.
Talking about, he's like, because on Mr. Tumble the kids in a wheelchair went on the minibus. I'd really like to do that. I was like, oh, okay, so you've got no interest in cerebral palsy. We could go on a minibus. You don't need to have cerebral palsy.
That's so, I love that. That's just children, isn't it?
Yeah. So all I'll worry about, oh God, fucking them up. Of course we're fucking them up. That's our job.
Rent a minibus.
Rent a minibus.
Give them a ride.
Put them all in a minibus. I like this. How about you,
Jess? So when the twins were learning to walk, Dylan started walking at about 11, 12 months, and then Freddie didn't walk till about 16, 17 months. And as well as every attempt being accompanied by this like raucous laughter, like he's got this real like Sid James chuckle. It's hilarious that when we're at soft play, people would be like, you've got to get this kid on YouTube. Like, he's really like, it's hilarious, really filthy. So, but, you know, he was pretty wobbly and at one point I think we're in A&E 3 times in a week because he would just, if there was one sharp corner in this room,
he'd find it
with his head and, you know, get a major egg because if he fell to the right side, he couldn't break his fall. Mm. And I think in some way he wants to avoid putting weight on his right arm because he doesn't have the flex in his elbow. So I think that would damage his arm. So now he's kind of learned to tumble in the right way. But I'll never forget the first time, you know, he was sort of cruising around the car as I was getting Dylan in. It was a real kind of mum fail. I should have had him, I don't know, somewhere else in the buggy or whatever. And he kind of went round and went off the curb and just
went.
And I just howled and yelled, like, because I just saw this enormous, like, bubbly,
shining.
Yeah, like egg, you know, bowl of eggs. It was just horrendous. And by the end, it happened so much, you know, I just kind of knew what the right things to look for were. And I was like, I don't think we need to go to A&E. I mean, generally, if it pops out, it's a good thing. And if they scream and then they stop, you know, they react. Anyway, so that happened for so long, like on and off the first 3 years. And it was so difficult. And the stuff I'm anticipating being difficult is the psychological, the kind of realization that he's very different, which is sort of happening now, especially with the surgery. But particularly at 7, when there's that sort of consciousness about how you appear to your peers and how you are different. And so that's sort of what I was anticipating being difficult. But all this early stuff was like not what I was expecting at all. I wasn't expecting all the physical, the hurt and the injury. So I was worried that sort of the impact on Dylan, because I had a terrible reaction. I need to contain it better, and I probably do now, but early on I'd just be like, oh, you know, appalled because it looked so bad. And I was so worried that I was loading that onto Dylan. And in a way, he was quite risk averse for the beginning of life in playgrounds and stuff. And I'm sure that's because he saw Freddie just tumble and give himself black eyes and noses and faces. We've talked about that a bit. We talked about his muscle transfer surgery that happened 4 months ago. And Freddie calls his smaller arm, he calls it his baby arm, which is just, you know, Leo has started saying, my baby arm, my baby arm. We're like, Leo, you don't have a baby arm. You've got two arms. He's like, no, my baby arm. And quite a lot of Freddie's friends say they have a baby arm as well.
I think that's really interesting, actually. I know you're probably more of a psychologist than me and understand these things, but that feels like actually there's something in Freddie that people want to emulate.
Yeah. It's a positive thing.
That they see him saying something, they want to see it, say it, and have it too. That I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, particularly at this age, I think. I think that will probably change, but. So we talked to Freddie very much about his story. He's a bit reticent to talk about it, actually.
So is Jasper. Wait, is he?
They're so little.
But it's interesting at this age of kind of consciousness about their bodies and that there is a reticence.
But they're both very sunny, positive people. I don't know if this is at play, but my instinct is Jasper's just like, I don't want to talk about that. It's negative. He doesn't want. If he goes into hospital... On his birthday, once he had to go in by ambulance in the middle of his birthday party. And then next day at school, everyone was like, how was your birthday? And he was like, yeah, it was great. That's it. Yeah.
I think that's very typical of a child, actually. Because they don't want that difference. No. And they don't want to... I mean, I found that even with Olivia, sometimes she would be overly positive and optimistic. I mean, she's a lot older now. She's like
bottle that.
Yeah. She just took B as being B, but certainly in the last couple of years, and particularly in the last year, we have had so many conversations about, you know, why is it that B has this, or why, even to the point of talking about genes and stuff.
Has she instigated those conversations?
Well, partly because we've been reading quite a lot of books, and it's been sometimes instigated by her, because she's surrounded by 8 and 9 year olds, and they have questions, and they... certain level of maturity where they talk about these things, so she needs explanations for her friends at school or when they come out to our house. But then also we've been reading books and looking at lots of things like together that I think have prompted her to ask questions, like the Sinead Burke book. We were talking about this earlier before we were recording. Brilliant book, Sinead Burke's wonderful. It's a children's book about being different and being you, and it's just lots of life affirming tips and support for anybody regardless of who they are. If people who don't know, Sinead Burke's a little person and the advocate for disability rights, and she's also been a teacher, and she has an amazing TED talk that's worth listening to. But she just puts things so eloquently about why people noticing differences is okay, and how actually we should talk about it, but that you just need to be you, and if people have a problem with that, that's their problem. And Olivia's loved that book, and it's prompted her to be
really great.
And I always remember she was, I think in year two, she had to do a project at school where they were designing, I think they were designing like a city or something, and she very proudly told me when she came home that she had, how she designed it, and then that she'd made sure that there was a lot of disabled parking in the car park. She designed the whole car park, and of course no other 7-year-old or 6-year-old had thought about that.
It never come into their consciousness, would it?
No.
Whilst you're driving around trying to find somewhere to park.
So, I don't think she can educate then and talk about these things with her friends at school and so class. Nice to hear. It's fantastic.
And do you think she'd have been ready to talk about difference any earlier than now? Because I think there is an age.
I think it's being, we've always been really honest about B has all of these extra challenges, and you know, it's been kind of obvious because B's been in hospital for surgeries, and when she was little, Olivia would say things like, why can't B go to my school, or B can't talk yet but she will talk, and I'd just be like, well, you know, B will do what's right for B in B time, you know, trying to not give her kind of this expectation that B was going to do something but just a little bit later. But now she's ready for a fuller conversation. And I think to your point about the minibus, it was a bit like that with Olivia. Like, you would try and say, oh, okay, let me tell you about B and the fact that she has this challenge, and then she'd just be like, no, like, well, I just want to know what colour glasses she's going to get next. Yeah. You know, something trivial. But that's how kids think.
I find with Spike, he will say something like, I'm wobbly too, Mummy. I've had a seizure. Because he's desperate. You know, there's so much attention going on the other child, or he'll like push Jasper out the way. I'm like, you can't do that. Just try and remember he's wobbly in a minute. Come out later. Mummy, I'm feeling a bit wobbly.
I think really
I had a seizure.
Yeah,
Dylan does that too.
Does he?
Yeah. Well, he'll pretend, he'll sort of put his hand in his sleeve and say, Mummy, look, I don't have a hand either. There was quite a lot of that at like three.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't get so much more attention, Freddie, but he just, by the nature of it.
Help dressing and things like that.
Yeah, and we offer different prosthetics and he never wants to use them, but yeah, it's a little bit more attention on Freddie, I guess. But we haven't really had... We talked to them both, really, about how he... About Freddie's story and how he just... How he grew inside me and his arm just didn't grow. And that's how he was made, inside my tummy. But every now and again, Dylan will ask things like, are his fingers inside his arm?
Oh my God, I love that thought.
Yeah.
How amazing.
I wonder if it comes because they've just started school.
Yeah.
And other kids are asking them kind of what you're saying about Olivia too, about sort of explanations for their friends.
Yeah, maybe.
And I think it's a bit, there's a bit of it that comes down to that.
Starting to see something, see his brother through other people's eyes.
As it always just being just
normal.
The way it is.
Yeah.
This leads quite nicely into like how you parent between them. So obviously like how you parent Spike, and how that changes and how that kind of goes around with Jasper's disability and whether one will get away with more or less. Because I was thinking about this with my parents. Obviously, their parenting style was the same between my brother and I, but our personalities are different. So, like, I was the big rebel. Even though their parenting was the same, the way that we reacted to both the parenting style was just different. It was a lot more docile, while I would rebel massively. And, like,
you're the younger.
I'm the older.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is crazy, right? And it's interesting then when you put a disability in the mix and then how that will change and how siblings are then, how you parent siblings. So, yeah.
What you've about, joined by
you've
that
got a face,
now.
Gemma. Oh, what do you think?
Well, I don't know.
I think it's a real challenge for all parents anyway, because all children are different and they will need different things at different times. And you try and be fair and you try and be consistent. But depending on your mood, depending on the circumstances, you can find yourself not being fair.
And there's just so much like guilt, because already Jasper takes so much more, since he was little. And then he's really, really placid and will do what you tell him to do and will sit at the table and eat, because that's part of his condition, partly because he's really medicated, partly just his personality, like your brother. And Spike is the total opposite, although obviously he's just a kid, like that's all normal stuff. But so he's always got the harder side of me. And I kind of made a conscious decision, and actually Jess and I talked about this because we were both struggling with like our two most rebellious children, which were Spike and Dylan. And I just had to say to myself, like, he is just a tiny human being. Like, he's not doing any of this. He doesn't know anything he's doing. Nothing is he is doing intentionally. And I was finding myself getting really cross and angry and like irritated in the moment. He was taking the brunt of that. And I just had to kind of tell myself, like, every time you feel that way, just remind yourself that he's just this tiny little human being and come to him with kindness. So when he was being mental, I'd be like, come to him with kindness. Come to him with kindness. Like some sort of lunatic.
Yeah. And I also repeat that mantra.
Tiny person. It's been reciprocal. So the more that I meet him at his level and come to him with kindness and like try to narrate what's happening rather than just like shout and shit all over them, like, instead I'm like, I can see that this is difficult for you,
so like the gentle parenting
even though it was quite often just snap into like, that's it, I've had enough. And Jasper said to me the other day, like, Mummy, I tell you all the time I love you because I'm so frightened you're going to get angry. And I'm like, oh, no, but I'm not angry. Am I angry? Oh. But I thought you loved me. You tell me you love me all the time.
Because of what?
What did you say?
What did you mean?
I don't shout.
So it was suddenly I was aware that, like, he's the one that's constantly like, oh, just Spike, it's okay.
Placating.
Because I'm like, oh, God, I can't deal. Why have you thrown that down the stairs today? Or whatever it is, you know. Yeah.
Toys down the stairs.
I have to consciously make an effort to parent differently than my natural instinct would be. Yeah.
Interesting. How about you?
It tends to be the same, I have to say. Maybe. Although, you know, there's that bit in The Crown. Do you watch The Crown?
Of course. Yeah.
Where the Queen and Philip are like, who's your favourite?
Who's your favourite? Oh, yeah. Who is your favourite?
So, at the beginning, I was like, you know, Dan and I would be like, who's your favourite? This is before Leo. He's like, I think Dylan and I are most similar. I was like, yeah, you are. And yeah, probably Freddie's my favourite. I mean, like, with a pinch of salt, obviously, as parents, only joking, but obviously not. and Freddie was, he just loved the joy in life, but was obviously a little bit more vulnerable. So if Dylan was, you know, quite often Freddie doesn't want to roll his sleeves back, so he'll just be hanging. Dylan still now really irritates me, pulls him by the sleeve and can kind of pull him around. And he's less stable, but, you know, he's got good stability and he's got an amazing core because it all comes from here. So he's just got this muscular centre. But, you know, he's obviously going to wobble. So I come down quite hard on Dylan for things like that are kind of specific.
Yeah.
But generally, I think I'm pretty much the same. But I wonder if with a physical disability, it is a bit different because with the cognitive needs are the same,
right?
Really.
So understand the barriers and the...
Yeah. So actually that remains kind of similar. And same with Leo.
That's the challenge, I think, twofold, I guess. It's communication and kind of related to that behaviour. So when B doesn't understand something or won't do something or has a complete fucking meltdown, you know, when we need to get out of the house or something like that, sometimes Olivia finds that hard.
well, of course, we all find that hard, but yeah. I don't react with anger and disciplining B in the same way that yeah. if Olivia had had a hissy fit about something, I would, because yeah. she's reacting like that and behaving like that for a different reason. Maybe fundamentally it's the same reason, yeah. but I can actually talk it through with Olivia yes. and rationalize it in a way that I can't at times with B. So she's very accommodating with that, and I'm very aware of it, but it is hard. And it's hard to distinguish between when it is something where B's crossed a red line and she knows she's crossing a red line, and she's literally just misbehaving and acting up in yeah. a way that I need to clamp down on, and we need to put her from green to amber to red on the chart or whatever, versus something where it's a genuine frustration that she can't communicate a need or a want yeah. or something to us. Mm. So I find that balance really hard to strike at times, and I know that I don't always get it right, but I also am quite honest with Olivia about that now. I can sort of, she'll say, hey, B pushed me, and you know, you didn't shout at B, you yeah. shouted at, you know, you yeah. shouted at me for that before, and you didn't shout at B. She calls me out on it when I do, which is good and bad. You know, we have a lot of conversations around, actually, you're right, that doesn't seem fair. I can see why you'd be frustrated by that. Let me explain to you why I did that in that moment. And, you know, I don't always come to it with such clarity and a good explanation. Sometimes it is, you're right, sorry. B, don't do that again, you know, whatever it might be. So it's really hard. And I just don't want her to ever feel resentment. But she will. She will feel resentment in moments, and she probably feels resentment in moments now. It's really tricky balance to tread.
And Spike's really, he's quite sort of like emotionally switched on, and he is now saying to me things like, I'm hurting too, or you didn't ask me, or like, I'll say, Jasper, are you okay? Jasper, you okay? And Spike's like, I'm okay.
Oh, bless him.
Spikey. So now I'm consciously making an effort in the morning when they're putting their shoes on, and normally like, get your shoes on, Spike. And Jasper, you know, the processing of, like, let alone physically doing it with one left hand that doesn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. And then physically trying to work out how to do that for him, it just takes a very long time. So I've learned so much patience with him. Like, we give all the time that he needs, and Spike, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. So now that Spike is able to sometimes put me back, you know, remind me, I'm trying to give it the same amount of time, because God, how does that feel as a kid when the other one is getting so much calmness difficult. And then yeah. he's getting like crazy mother?
It is difficult.
Do you think that Spike has more empathy because of his relationship? I mean, it's really impossible to say, isn't it?
No, but I didn't. But obviously what I see at home is them butting heads, but I just got a report from his nursery, and it was just, I mean, it was just so sweet. Spike is the sweetest child. He's so kind. He's got so many friends. He's so empathetic. He looks after all the kids in the class. He always asks everyone okay.
I wonder where he got that from.
Oh, no. And this little girl came up to me and said, oh, Spike, he looked after me when I was crying. She brought me a teddy. And so, yes, he does. But I don't always see that, but yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Wake me up, loud as clouds,
all my love for you. So now we've reached that time in the podcast that we want to ask you guys for a hashtag
awkward.
That was awkward in itself.
I mean, it is hashtag awkward. I've got to make it a bit awkward.
So just to remind what that is, we ask all our guests, and we also share some ourselves, for a hashtag awkward moment. Basically, it's that unsolicited but often well-meaning advice that you get, or comment that you get from either a friend, a family member, or
stranger in the street.
Lovely. Yes, a stranger that comes up to you in the street. So, Jess, have you got a hashtag awkward that you'd like to share with us?
Yes. Unfortunately, with a family member, when the twins were first born, well, they were probably about 4 or 5 months old, we took them to my husband's grandfather, who was 99 at the time. So he did meet them, which was lovely, but he did study Freddie for some time, disapprovingly, and was like, oh... and looked at Dylan, his twin, And oh, but that one, this one's perfect. And sort of put Freddie down and picked
oh,
up
God.
Dylan.
Oh my God.
Which was difficult.
How did you bite your tongue? Or did you literally bite your tongue?
Yeah, no, I really did. Eyes watering.
Forgive him because of his age, essentially.
Well, and, you know, and I spoke to Dan's mum about it. And, it, you know, it is a generational thing, sure. And we're lucky that actually, in terms of disability being visible, it's mm-hmm. it's we're probably a generation that has been exposed to it, even though we're saying not enough.
Yeah.
But more so than them.
More so than them. Mm. And so I think you've shown about forgive the ignorance, you can understand it, but it's pretty hard to hear somebody else say that your baby's not perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty grim. Yeah.
Oh, Gemma. Something that you want to share. I feel it's like a bit confessional, isn't it? It's other people's confessions, really, isn't it?
Totally.
I think because Jasper's disability is not particularly obvious, we haven't had that many scenarios. I used to find it really grating at the swings. For some reason, like passive-aggressive mothers quite frequently, like it's happened more than once, would tell their own children like how that boy's a bit big for that swing, or like this is baby swings. And when Jasper was just having the time of his life, like in the baby swing, because he's wobbly on one side, like it affects his whole left side, so sitting on a big boy swing holding on with two hands, he's just mastered, he's over the moon. But he loved to go in the swings, and how wonderful for me that I could actually plonk him in there and swing him. But then you'd get some mother making a comment about it. And I just thought, who is that Bennett? Like, what are they even getting out of that? Mm. Other than, it must come from a place of competition, essentially. Like, my kid by that age is going to be able to use the swing.
Well, and not just speaking to you. It's like a way of you hearing, but sort of.
Oh, God, exactly.
Really so passive-aggressive.
Passive-aggressive.
And what about the children? Their children that are hearing that.
But then they start commenting, like, he's really big to be in this way, because you've just said it. I mean, it's bizarre. And I've tried to let it go over my head, but, you know, it does piss you off a bit.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, I guess with B, she's really young-looking. Yeah. So she wouldn't get that sort of comment, but she'd be getting babied a lot. So yeah, and she still does. Mm. We went to a Halloween party this year, and there was one of the parents that I didn't know. I think she was a bit drunk, to be honest. And she was just all over B, like, chuchu-coochie-coochie-coo kind of cheeks, and bellissimo and stuff. And then I know she meant it well, but she was like, she wanted to give me a kiss and cuddle her, and was like treating her like a sort of 6-month-old
infantile.
Completely. And she gets it in the playground as well. I know she does. All the year six girls know her because they want to come her. And that's hard to stomach sometimes, but it's just, what can you do other than teach her to not, like, to stand up for herself and be like, I'm here, I'm B, how old are you, B? X, I would say. I think it's people's perceptions is a real hard one. And I guess you get that with Lua sometimes as well, don't you? Because she's
little as well. I've had a funny one in a playground, actually, I just remembered. Like, Lua's tiny, like, she's 6 nearly, but she looks maybe 2-ish. So I was on I don't know if it was the swing, it was a while ago, and anyway, she was on some sort of apparatus in a playground, and this little girl, she was maybe 10, ran over and was like, why is your baby so fat? Right? Yeah.
Where's that come from?
I don't know.
But her
parents were like, the guy was like dressed in a suit and the mother very well dressed and like in Primrose Hills, and they must have immediately knew, like, oh shit, our daughter's gonna do something. And they ran up to like, what did she ask? I'm so sorry. And I was like, no, she just asked why my baby's fat. And like, Lua, because they were worried, Lua is obviously disabled. Like, she, you know, she looks different to other children. So I think they assumed that their daughter had said something horrible and very embarrassed. And I was like, no, it's just why she's fat. And then I turned to the girl and said, she's fat because she eats a lot and she likes all the yummy food, which I'm sure you do too. She's like, yeah. And then like ran off, and her parents were just mortified, mortified. Yeah. So that's.
How did you feel? Did you feel?
I burst out laughing. Yeah. I just thought it was hilarious. Like, of all the things that you could ask, it was that. And it's just that naivete from a child. Like, what's the thing that they notice? Just chubbiness and double chins.
I find that quite refreshing from kids, because often, you know, it feels like people are noticing something and no one's saying it, whereas kids will just give you that face value response. Where's his hand? Why is she fat? Whereas, you know, you can see that some parents are just sort of desperately trying to scrabble around in their head for something to say that's not related to their disability. Because they don't want to offend, and it's well meant, but it's fucking irritating. I just want to, and probably feel different now, but certainly when they were babies, I was like, why aren't you asking me? Why aren't you?
Yeah.
I don't know why. That's a sort of a weird, sick thing. But
other
than Jerry Halliwell.
Name drop.
Who just came straight out, was it a baby group that we were at? You know, when you see someone looking so glossy and gorgeous, and I was like, wow. You know, and you're like, did I go to school with you? You sort of know someone. And then I was like, oh my God, it's Cherry Halliwell with her baby, or who was a similar age to Freddie and Dylan. And Jerry and Freddie had a real connection. Amazing. During class, and she came up afterwards and was like, oh, where's his hand? I said, oh, it's just the way he was born. And I was like, thank fuck somebody's just come out and asked me rather than going
looking around
the room. His smile's amazing, you know. It's like, oh, shut up, he's got gorgeous eyes. But she was lovely, really nice, and we had like a 10-15 minute chat at the end of the class where she was sharing a story. She'd just been on a yacht with this, the captain had one hand, and he just was basically managing this incredible 20-foot yacht that you know, she was just very encouraging and just said, you know, he's the biggest presence in this room, about Freddie and how amazing, you know. It was just lovely, nice encounter.
That is amazing.
And like, that's from somebody who obviously is used to talking to people because they're in the public eye, but also she must feel looked at. You know, people are doing the same thing to her. It's like, oh, Freddie, aren't they? Oh, there's Jerry Halliwell. Don't look at her. Don't talk to her.
Or they're looking at
her and talking about her vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
How refreshing that she actually, you know, came to the point and said what she wanted to say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm disappointed you didn't give me her number.
Also,
suggest some sort of play date with Monty. Still waiting, Jerry.
Jerry,
come on, Jessica Honeywell.
That's the first thing Dan said. Did you get a number? I could have followed her, but it'd be a bit creepy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So I think we've run out of time, unfortunately, today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies. Thanks for having us.
It's been really refreshing to talk about things, hasn't it?
Yeah. And you've given me definitely food for thought. So thank you very much for that.
We have to let us know if and when it happens.
It will be because of you two. I've had another job. Thanks, guys.
No, I'm joking.
Pleasure. Anytime.
Anyway, we can chat now. Done.
Hey, we done. Woo! Oh, God. That was fun.
Yeah.
What a great idea as well. Loudest clouds, all my
love for you. Thank you so much for listening to the Fucking Normal podcast. We love making this podcast.
Yes, we do.
We're part of a much bigger team, almost exclusively all parents of disabled children. And our goal is to reach as many people as possible and create a community of support for parents and carers who share our experiences.
So if you've liked what you've heard, please like and subscribe so that we can reach out to more people. You can find more information on this and other episodes at fuckingnormalpodcast.com. That's fkingnormalpodcast.com. You can join us on Facebook and on Instagram at fuckingnormal_podcast. That's fkingnormal_podcast. You can get all the links and more information in the show notes below.
So thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Wake me up.